You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
We'll take a glass together, and we will lift it to the good life. And as we're lifting it, we will most sincerely say, we'll take a glass together!
This is Equity One, Broadway's happy hour.
Pour yourself a drink and join us as we chat about life, theater, and everything in between.
I'm Elliot Maddox.
And I'm Caleb Dickey. Join us for your Equity One.
Hi, Caleb.
Hey, Elliot.
Cheers.
Clink.
A nice, refreshing
that was,
seltzer.
Like,
I know.
Together, like, we are in sync. Are you on your period?
We could do this in our sleep.
No, we could.
Oh, my God. Period. Hot topics. Okay, so I know you're not the biggest Drag Race fan, but you keep up.
But I am following.
So do you follow Manila Luzon on Instagram?
I do not. Okay.
So
it's going well.
Everyone listening, go to your Instagram and look up Manila Luzon. Manila, like the place, and then L-U-Z-O-N. So the runway theme last week was swerves and curves, or padded for filth, because drag queens pad their bodies to have like a more hourglass feminine shape.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, totally.
On Manila's Instagram is a dress that she was going to wear, but RuPaul said it was in bad taste. Now, I don't agree with RuPaul. I think it's brilliant. It's Manila in, like, a maxi pad dress.
Yeah, with some period blood on her.
Yeah, but it's very elegant.
It is. And I also love this red...
the red streak.
The
because
red streak
she always
hair.
Does a streak in her hair. What do you think about this? I think it's a shame that that production told her not to wear that on.
Yeah,
her.
I think it's a little bit censorship.
Yeah.
I was also reading a book about why is... blood any different if it's from a woman or if it's from like fighting or anything, like why is
right.
it so much more disgusting when it's actually in a book that I read in my book club. The book is called Shrill and it's by Lindy West, who's a feminist blogger, writer.
Mm-hmm.
And she talks a little bit about like how the devil's standard on women for multiple things, but period blood being one of them, how like is like why can't it be a joke, or like why
yeah.
does like women bleeding every month when it's like they can't help it, like that's just them, like why is it so different from
right
fighting or action films?
Well, exactly. And my kind of argument is like, you know, Drag Race is not like family entertainment necessarily. Like there's always like zooming in on the pit crew members in their underwear, and like it's just constant like dick joke after
yeah
you know innuendo
yeah.
and it's just like, I don't know. I think, like, it's a shame that that wasn't on TV.
Because mm-hmm.
it's really, I think it's really, like, kind of cool and controversial and fun. And that's drag.
Yeah. What? And then I did like her connection to, like, the French poodle and whatever. They even said that. I wonder
yeah.
if they said that in editing to make it
uh-huh.
seem like it was, like,
right.
this was a good choice or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. It was interesting. Anyway, you said period, and I just, it's a hot topic.
It's on your end.
Yeah,
another
on
hot
mind.
Topic is the... hashtag, I'm not a lab rat.
I know. So for those of you who don't know, the our union, Actors Equity, has just called for a strike
yeah.
on developmental work. So
that's labs, workshops,
stage readings.
It's a lot of things that happen in the industry.
It's a lot because the wage for labs for development work hasn't gone up in 12 years. And the Broadway League did not, wasn't willing to negotiate with the union, and wouldn't really listen and take what they wanted seriously. So now they're asking members to strike. I mean, it's very...
And they're at the, well, even the day, even right before they said the strike,
mm-hmm.
they were at, like, ECCs passing
mm-hmm.
out buttons and getting people to sign up. Like, it's, thing happening here in New York for sure.
Yeah, it's I mean, it's very bold
mm-hmm.
to call for a strike,
especially in this season of like there's I mean they're always doing developmental labs, but
mm-hmm.
like especially now in the spring.
Yeah, it's gonna be interesting to see how quickly they respond.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I know a lot of members feel differently about it. And it's really, I think it's really complex. So I understand when people have
confusion almost on like what they're wanting.
Sure.
The union is wanting. Or
yeah, it's definitely a hot button topic.
If you have any thoughts about it, please write to us.
Yeah. Caleb, how's your week been?
My week's been kind of funny. I was telling you earlier, my phone decided to crash and die and go to purgatory.
Oh, no.
So I have a new loaner phone, and it's like
a Go phone?
A Go phone. And it's a lot smaller than my other phone, so I can only fit so much on it. So I'm kind of figuring, like, I don't need those apps in my life, actually. Like, I'm not going to have this Facebook app.
Okay.
I'm going to get rid of that. But I still have Messenger so people can, like, reach to me.
Right.
You know, like, still stay a little bit connected. Mm-hmm. Get rid of some of those, like, picture editing ones that I wasn't using. And some games I don't need anymore. Like, maybe I can, like, read a book instead of doing my, like, two dots. And you know?
They're fun.
They're fun.
I'm, like, really getting into, like, a Subway game moment.
What's your Subway game?
A Disney Emoji Blitz.
Always. Oh, the Chris Rice and Clay Thompson, or is
really,
that the one
really
love?
Fun. Really, really fun. I don't know. I think we play that, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's I've been playing it a lot lately.
Right. Any other highlights for your week?
Yes. Well, I got to see Head Over Heels right before it closed.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
So, Michael and I went to go see Head Over Heels, and I loved it.
Loved it. I thought it was the most creative thing I've seen in 2000. I saw it in 2018, and it was at the top of my show list of things that I loved.
I loved it. I thought it was so fun. I thought, like, the whole premise and the weaving of the music was really smart, well done. The cast was amazing.
Yes.
Everyone was singing their faces off. Michael is fully obsessed. Like, he's listening to it constantly.
Yeah. I love the costume design. They're, like, so intricate, beautiful. Also, I love the gender swaps on the ensemble. Like, some of the men had skirts while pants, and then, like, a skirt pant. And it was also for the females. Some of them were in skirts and also pants. I just loved it was all across the board, neutral, equal.
Yeah, it was very cool. I loved it. And it was really fun. The audience was wild the night I was there. And, you know, it was closing weekend, so I think everyone was excited to see it. But it was really, really great, I will say. Went to the merch stand at intermission.
And?
Everything was sold out.
Everything? Completely.
They had two styles of shirts in extra larges and up only.
Would you want to wear, like, a shirt dress to bed? That's what I would do as a kid.
Well, I got a little inside scoop from the second merch stand that was in the corner, being like, the merch is in the lobby. And I said, because I was, like, going at the mannequins, being like, is that one claimed? Is that one claimed? And everyone had claimed them in the cast and crew.
Ugh, annoying.
And so she was like, you know, we don't have them, but you can still order them through the website.
Oh.
So I ordered myself a shirt through the website. Don't worry. I got my merch.
Well, I want to hear it when it arrives in one of our merch madnesses.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking of, sounds like a perfect time.
Segue.
This is Merch Madness. Okay. This week's Merch Madness is all about our special guest for the week. We are going to be talking to Chase Brock, choreographer extraordinaire.
I know, one of my favorite people that I've actually connected with this last year, and
yeah,
he's amazing.
He was so much fun to talk to. I can't wait for you guys to hear that interview. But we went to see his show, The Girl with the Alkaline Eyes, at Theater Row. It's running this weekend.
It closes this weekend. Yeah,
January 13th, and you'll hear all about tickets and where to find information on that. But we got, I got a shirt from his dance company. They were selling merch there, and you know I just could not resist.
And they love as merch as much as you love merch, I believe.
I know.
They have all the kinds of merch.
They had, like, a normal Chase Brock merch. They had specific Girl with Alkaline Eyes merch.
Yeah.
But I decided to get the Chase Brock Experience tee.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's a heather gray.
Yes.
Like, blue tint heather gray.
Uh-huh,
it's like,
classic.
I'm a sucker. Yeah. I love this color. And then in a really pretty orange, it has the Chase Brock experience on the front of the shirt. Really good screen printing. It's, like, thick, so I know it's going to be durable.
Stay after a wash.
Yeah. It's a classic, classic fit. Mm-hmm. And it's really cute, really simple. And I always love to, like, be able to support those companies in whatever way we can.
Totally.
It's more so that than, like, buying merch at a Broadway show. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I feel like I'm actually helping support them.
No.
And then, because Chase Brock is the choreographer of the sensation mega hit...
That started rehearsals today.
Started rehearsals today of Be More Chill, coming to Broadway this spring, with friend of the podcast, George Salazar.
Pew, pew, pew!
I'm also going to be reviewing my shirt from Be More Chill. So this is a shirt they sell that is literally a carbon copy of one of George's costumes.
So clever.
As Michael Mel. And we saw so many people cosplaying this when we saw the show. When we were lucky enough to see it. I don't even know if we recorded about that, but like,
I think won the lottery. Yeah, I won the lottery. Yeah. If this lottery was the hardest lottery to win because there was maybe only a few tickets per show.
Yeah.
And we won two of them.
So exciting. And I think we talked about that in the interview, too. But, so this is, like, a black long-sleeve shirt, and we love a long-sleeve shirt. We love different.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, so this says Creeps on it with the C and the S on the sleeves. And, it's lime green. I don't know if it's, like, a reference to something.
Listeners,
help us out.
Yeah.
Any Be More Chill fans out there, let us know if this is, like, a specific reference. But it's super cute. It's very authentic. And I like to wear this with a pair of sweatpants I have that have lime green lining.
Oh.
So it's, like, I pick up the accents them, and it's, like, very cute. Both shirts, really great. New additions. So I don't have any, like, real bias
emotional connection to them yet. Wearing emotional.
Yes. But what I will have to say is that I think the winner of this week's Merch Madness is my Be More Chill shirt.
Very unique. Yes.
Very unique. You don't necessarily know what it is when you look at it. And I always think that's fun with show merchandise. And I love lime green. It's one of my favorite colors. And it's fun, like, to wear. And it's, like, the costume.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Everyone, like, cosplays it. And it's funny. So, yeah. That's this week's Merch Madness.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Well, Caleb, if you want, I think we should head on over to our interview.
With Chase Brock, let's do it.
Yes.
Come on over.
Let's go.
We're so excited to have our special guest, director, choreographer, man about town, artistic, Chase Brock. Welcome.
Thanks so much. I'm happy to be here. We have been able to squeeze into a dressing room here at Theater Row. You are a busy man, Chase. So thank you for carving out some time to talk with us.
You're so welcome. Thank you guys for being interested. I appreciate it.
Yeah. You have a lot going on right now. I'm excited to like delve in and talk to you about all of that.
It is a busy season. It's a surprisingly, you never know. I mean, I'm sure you guys know. It's like it's either feast or famine, and it's either nothing is happening or everything's happening all at once. And this happens to be a moment when a lot of stuff is happening all at once.
There are worse problems to have, for sure.
Absolutely.
We like to start each guest with talking about how you got started with the arts, however it might have been as a kid or as a teenager. Just barf that out on us.
Yeah, I mean, I'm from North Carolina and near Asheville. And really, it was two sort of different things. Flat Rock Playhouse, which is the State Theater of North Carolina, was just a couple of miles from my house, and my grandparents had a subscription, and I kind of just grew up knowing about that theater. And I think like you took class trips there and stuff like that. So when I was 6, I started taking class there in the children's theater program. And at the same time, a cousin of mine was studying dance at a local dance studio and had a dance recital. And I went and insisted that I be on the stage and demanded to go on stage at the end of it. And sort of, you know, a monster was born, and that's what happened.
Very cool.
It was sort of a dual track of theater and dance right from the beginning.
And did you always have more of a proclivity toward dance, or what was kind of your relationship between balancing that theatrical sense with dance?
Yeah, it was. I mean, for a long time, it was a kind of schizophrenic, like, am I a dance person or a theater person? Mm-hmm. And in the theater world, for a long time, I felt like a really dancey theater person. And in the dance world, I felt like a really jazzy, theatrical dance person.
Sure.
And I finally gave up on trying to define it, and I think accepted my destiny as just a real mutt. I like my dance democratic. I like it. I like all the arts. I like stuff that's good. I like a big old American mega mix, melting pot. Realness, what have you.
I love that. I feel like that's kind of how we all end up. Like, we all have our own mishmash of, like, influences and things that really inspire us. What were some of your, like, biggest inspirations when you were younger?
He was a teenager. Anne Reinking was my mentor.
Sure.
I was her student, and she kind of took me under her wing. I was a really young student in her summer program, and so I became very, very obsessed with all things Bob Fosse, mm-hmm. and so that was, like, my 13-year-old life was, like, very much about that. And, you know, and I also, this is so interesting. My high school theater director, Betsy Bisson, suggested I read The Production Notebooks, which was this, series of essays by a dramaturg. And in one of them, the essay was about this Robert Wilson production at the Alley Theater. And I got very interested in Bob Wilson's process. So I kind of chased him around the world for a while. So I had this like experimental theater, very kind of European, operatic, bold design kind of life happening. And then this very musical, like musical comedy, mid-century 70s bump and grind, Bob Fosse, Michael Bennett side. And, you know, but I loved a bunch of other stuff like the Muppets, and I loved Jem and the Holograms, and I loved Madonna, and like really the first kind of theatrical performances I saw were probably Madonna concerts on like HBO and MTV and Madonna videos. We did not go to like dance concerts or anything like that in my childhood, or even musicals really. The first professional musical I saw was the tour of Crazy for You. In 1992, and the first Broadway show I saw was Bringing the Noise, Bringing the Funk in 1996. So I don't know. It was like a real mashup of stuff. The first modern dance I ever saw was the PBS Dance in America episode, The Wreckers Ball, which was Paul Taylor. And that was interesting because I was imagining modern dance as being this very kind of like jokey interpretive dance thing, and suddenly there was storytelling. And it was on television, and there was pop music, and there was lyrics, and it was character-driven. So, I don't know. I liked a whole bunch of different stuff.
That's interesting, because I have zero background in modern dance. Like, absolutely zero. I had none growing up at my, like, home studio.
Yeah.
None in college.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to, like, entice a layman into modern dance, how would you do that?
I would honestly say read Agnes DeMille's biography of Martha Graham. It's called Martha, and it is the best dance book. Agnes DeMille was an amazing writer. Not everybody knows that. And in a funny way, her choreography is underrated today because it's pre-1950s, pre-1970s, so it does not have that pelvic thrust of Bob Fosse and Michael Bennett. It feels dated to us now, but it was incredibly psychological, incredibly gestural, very ahead of its time. And Agnes DeMille was a friend of Martha Graham's. And ultimately, Agnes DeMille, a lot of people say that she is a better writer than she was a choreographer, and she was one of the best choreographers in the history of Broadway. Her books are amazing. She has something like 13 books, and I have all of them, including the elusive Russian journals, which I finally found recently. But anyway, her books are amazing, and she wrote a biography of Martha Graham. And because she was friends with Martha, and because she is a choreographer and a dancer, and she's a great writer, it hits this amazing sweet spot that most dance books do not. And I feel like that book is a very, very good window into the creation, the birth of modern dance in America, which in a funny way, obviously ballet was made sort of over several centuries and many, many, many ballet masters and royalty and, you know, all kinds of different people contributed to that. And modern dance in a way was sort of like codified in one woman's body in basically, you know, 20 years or something. I mean, it's sort of amazing. Yeah. And in your question is interesting because Martha Graham herself never saw any dance. She never saw dance until she was like 20. Hmm. She didn't even start. She didn't even see it or take it. And then she completely changed the face of dance. And in a way, she was a modernist master in the same way that Picasso or those kinds of people are. So she had an amazing life. If you want to read about it, read Agnes DeMille's book. It will pull you into modern dance.
I'm going to put that on my list for this. I'm a big book reader, so you've convinced me. I'm going to read it.
There'll be one on your list for the
year. It will be.
You must. It's so good. Also, I love, you know, Twyla's Push Comes to Shove is so great. There's a lot of good. The Carolyn Brown book about Merce Cunningham, I think it's Change in Circumstance, is really excellent, too. I don't know. I feel like modern dance has such an American background and this kind of, like, early, I don't know about early 20th century, but like, you know, from the 20s through the 70s feels like a golden age of modern dance. This also, this amazing, amazing collection of the best dance writing just came out. It's called Dance in America.
Okay.
It's edited by Mindy Aloff, who just saw our show, which was so cool. So I got to geek out about her book. And it's for the Library of America. And she spent 9 years compiling the best writing on dance. Sort of like the best writing on the best dance of America, of a period. And it's this amazing, you know, two pieces by Arlene Crochet, or like three pieces by Edwin Denby, all these amazing, and then things you've never read. Anyway, it's just fabulous.
That's amazing.
It's my current pleasure reading.
This is like Chase's book club.
I know.
I love it.
I want to, like, do you like history? I feel like, do you enjoy history and reading a lot about that?
Yeah, I feel like also doing arts and doing theater and all that stuff leads you everywhere, right? Like, don't you find in theater, like, history is so crucial and all of it is related.
Do you incorporate that into any of your choreography when you're doing, like, research? I feel like that's because, like, reading about a little bit of here and here, you mesh together, like, can we mix these two styles into my own style? Do you, like, do you notice yourself doing that?
I definitely do it in theater. I mean, I think that's, like, the name of the game. Yeah. And that research process is all about that. I think with my company, it's a little less academic than that and a little more instinctual. Although this current piece we're doing, The Girl with the Alkaline Eyes, is a complete narrative, evening length, dance theater thriller. And so with this, we were imagining the future. We were looking at the technology of today and imagining how it might manifest tomorrow. We were looking at the politics of that now and potentially in the future. There was a lot of that kind of thinking this time around, which is a little bit unique.
Let's go back. How did you start your company? Like, before we could jump too far ahead.
Yeah. So I made my Broadway debut when I was 16, and I was in Susan Stroman's Revival of the Music Man for 2 years. So I did that thing about 750 times. And it was an amazing, like, breeding ground because Music Man is, first of all, such an excellent piece of writing. I mean, it's, like, one of the best books of any musical. So it's a great, great show to kind of learn on. And it's a show that's also full of people of every age. So you really become a community or become like a town on stage. Mm-hmm. And so I had all these, you know, mentors who were just older Broadway actors. And, you know, it was just like an amazing sort of education for 2 years. But at the same time, I was like, I always made up dances and I always put on shows and I really probably want to be doing that. And honestly, I love the rehearsal process and the creative process. And as soon as we were in the kind of daily doing of the show, I was less engaged in it. And I kind of thought, I think I'm a maker and not someone who wants to stand at center stage and be the center of attention in that way. And there are other people who are dying to do that. And I felt like I was taking their slot. And I kind of wanted the slot that I would see choreographers who seemed like a little bit tired mm-hmm. and think like, can they please let go so I can,
yeah.
you know. So I wanted everybody to rearrange and move around until everybody was really where they fit. and so then when I was 18, basically the entire time I was doing Music Man, I would go into the studio on a Monday and I would make up a dance, usually with my fellow cast members and sometimes other friends I met in other shows. And then I was amassing this little tiny like body of work. And when we got our closing notice, I decided to rent a space at 890 Broadway because it had been Michael Bennett's building mm-hmm. and Dreamgirls was made there and it felt mm-hmm. like good ghosts.
Yeah.
And so I produced a showcase there of my work. And when I was 18, I got my first agent for choreography. And I stopped and I retired at that moment from performing. And so I spent a couple of years, I spent like about 5 years sort of gigging around. And it was like a wonderful, it's what you should do. It was like mm-hmm. the perfect... I did benefits and concerts and industrials, like all that. Industrials actually did exist then, and I did them. GlaxoSmithKline. It was very funny. And but it's all good training. But I felt sort of at the end of that 5 years, I was like, I'm really longing to do something where I have more agency in it, and I am like expressing my voice a little bit more. And so I took basically the money from a cruise ship directing and choreography job that was like one of the more soulless things I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And I took that money, and also my grandfather passed away and left a little bit of money, and I sort of pooled all of that, and I said, I'm putting on a concert and I'm gonna do a concert. And I wasn't really calling it a company, but I was calling it a concert because mm-hmm. It felt very big to be like, I'm debuting my new company.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But of course that was what I was doing. And we did 3 nights at Dance New Amsterdam, which is now Gibney. Mm-hmm. And it went really well, and it was encouraging. Audiences were encouraging, and sales were encouraging enough, and people sort of said, when's the next one? And then I thought, I guess I'm doing this now. Mm-hmm. So I was 23, and that's how it started. And very, very fast, it kind of snowballed, because when you have a company, especially like a small nonprofit arts company in New York in the 21st century, it is all about the calendar and the fundraising mm-hmm. and yes. planning and, you know, just all the many, 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 many hats you have to wear. So it's quite a full-time job, especially in those early years.
And where do you find your inspiration? I mean, now you're still putting on shows. We saw Girl with Alkaline Eyes last night. We loved it.
Ooh, yay.
And where do you find that your inspiration comes from with these kind of narratives? Are they always a narrative piece, or... tell us about what your process is in like curating that work.
So I would say at the very beginning of the company, I had been working more in theater. And so the part of my brain that was the like less literal, less situation based part of my brain was wanting to sort of doodle about an idea or an impression or a piece of music or a spatial thing or a sculptural thing. And so the initial impulse of the company was actually not toward narrative work, but I think that it was always character-driven. The dancers have always been people. There's no... I don't think we have any piece, with the exception of a piece called Swamp Romp, I think. there are always people. And I really love community on stage. That's, mm-hmm. like, the thing I'm most interested in. Mm-hmm. And so I think people in a situation dealing with stuff together is kind of, like, what all of the dances have been about. And I would say some of them, you know, this is the 31st, and a number of those are like hour long, you know, it's a large body of work actually mm-hmm. in 11 years and 7 commission scores. A number of those were vaguely narrative. There's 2 that are the farthest, and actually there are 2 that I'm going to be reviving in the next 4 years. But at the end of the first decade, I said, okay, I have 30 dances, 6 scores, And I've kind of gotten my fill of playtime when I'm not in theater working on a story. Now I'm actually curious to know if I really took all of that part of my brain and applied it to this, what would happen? At the same time, I was looking around thinking, like, where is our story ballet tradition in America? Like, where is our narrative dance? I mean, it's a very interesting whole in a way. One of my mentors and friends, and he's on our advisory board, the great Matthew Bourne, you know, is doing narrative work that's funny and story-based and character-driven, and it's dance, and it's a little bit ballet, and it's a little bit musical theater, and it's a little bit jazz, and a little bit modern dance in the UK, but nobody's really doing that here. And there's, of course, downtown work and experimental work that dips into story, which is, some of which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. And uptown, there's story ballet being done in, like, the most archaic, European, 19th century pastoral way that, to me, has nothing to do with what's actually going on right now for our generation and our time. And I think it's interesting that we are aesthetically able to get on board with that because of the virtuoso performances of the dancers, but look the other way through the storytelling, the acting, the directing, the design choices. And so I just, all of that was kind of in my brain, and I thought, like, we're going to really do this. And because I'm going into the, we are now in the second decade of this company, I just, it wasn't any more about, like, what's the next piece. It was kind of like, let's think about the next 5 years. And I said, let's do 5 narrative evening length works with titles that are like mini Broadway shows, essentially. And so this was the first, this is the first one of those. And the second and fourth will be revivals of the two pieces I was mentioning to you, The Four Seasons and American Sadness. And then the first, third, and fifth are new pieces with new commission scores and scenarios and all of that. And so it's an exciting time, I think, for our company to be trying to, like, get in and sort of scratch around in this area that I think is underserved. And it's a gap in our theater in a way.
Yeah. When you revisit those pieces, how much do you think will adapt and change to the times and how emotionally you're feeling versus how you felt when you originally met the piece?
So The Four Seasons has had one revival. It was made in 2008, and it was revived in 2009, so it was, they were pretty close together. And we revised, that actually has text by David Zelnick, and we revised it slightly the second time, so it's had one round of revision. And I made a little bit of new choreography for it. The design stayed the same. But I do think, I mean, that piece is about climate change, so I thought it was really relevant at then, and it only feels more relevant, sadly, now. And so I think that piece is more timely, and I actually think more people are probably ready to hear about that and think about that and talk about that. So I think this time, I'm hoping that we pair doing the piece with some sort of mission. I would love to sort of try and do something, to try to contribute something. And I don't know what that...
Like a proceeds.
We don't have the exact idea yet, but that there would be something in the rehearsing of it or the making of it or the seeing of it or the doing of it that is contributing in some positive way that's making, like, a tiny chip in the enormous question and problem.
All the materials are recycled.
All of that. If we were doing it today, we would probably make it that way. And so it'll be interesting to see. And I think... Even, you know, I had been thinking of it as a straight revival. They were never standalone pieces, and so now they will be standalone pieces. They were always paired with other rep.
Sure.
But I was thinking of kind of a straightforward revival, and actually David Zelnick recently asked me if I wanted to revisit, and I was like, I don't know, I don't think so. But actually, even in just the first 5 performances of The Girl with the Alkaline Eyes, in sort of sitting back myself and experiencing it and sort of seeing how our company feels doing it and noticing how audiences are responding to it, I am already thinking, I already have, like, a lot of new ideas about Four Seasons, basically, that take it a little bit farther in the direction of a theater piece, I think. And this character, this weather reporter, Roz G, who sort of punctuates the concerti, she, I think, may become a larger presence in the evening, and may frame the evening in a slightly different way. With American Sadness, I think that piece has an amazing set by Dane Laffrey, and they've taken to calling it the Nine Hole, but it looks kind of like a Connect Four thing, and it is operated by 2 flymen, and it kind of comes in, and the dancers can be on it, under it, through it, inside it, underneath it. It does a lot of really interesting sculptural things. there's a problem of like where to do it because it requires a fly system, and a lot of the small houses that we love to perform in, including our home at Theater Row, don't have that. Mm-hmm. And so that's something that we have to sort of figure out. And with that piece, it's only ever been done once. There were four performances and it was filmed and there's a DVD of it. So it's lived on in that way. Uh-huh. And in a weird way, when you revive things, new dancers take on roles and things change and, you know, it becomes more malleable and more, there's more possibilities that open up within it. And I think with that piece, the film has only solidified the fact that eight dancers have ever done it. And there's two leads, and those two people have done those two parts. And so it kind of is looming a little bit large, and I'm very interested in the recasting of it to see what that does for the work. It's a really beautiful piece, I think. And there were some sort of loose ends and some elements where I toyed with narrative, but that piece has actually departures from the narrative. So we touch on this story a couple times, but then it dips out of it and into very, very abstract compositional things and mood things, and I don't know how I'm going to feel about that going back to it. I could totally see a world where some of that becomes a little more anchored in the basic narrative. I will report back to you in 3 years when we do it.
Yeah, we'll all come see.
Please, you're invited.
Yes.
I think I love the narrative. That's what, like, when we were watching the show last night, that's what I just loved most about watching The Girl with the Alkaline Eyes was the narrative all the way through. And we met doing your educational program.
Yes.
And I remember you talking about some of the aspects of your choreography, and one of them was Retrograde. And when I saw it on stage, I was like, oh, that's it. So cool. But how did you get your idea about the educational program that you've kind of been starting?
Yeah. So over the course of the company's history, which is, you know, now it's 11 years, we've always had educational components. And part of that was our impulse to, you know, if you look at the history of dance companies and arts organizations, basically you make things, you perform and share them with audiences, you teach and share your knowledge, you build community around that. So that was sort of a no-brainer, but we didn't have, I mean, in the beginning it's still a shoestring, but it was like a real, real shoestring in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't have the capacity to really be developing an education program. And so we did a lot of one-off education events that were really tailored to wherever we were performing. Mm-hmm. And I really mean everything from, we operated a kind of like daytime summer boarding, not boarding, summer daytime program for really young children, on the island of North Haven, Maine for 2 summers when we were touring there. And that was fascinating because all those people really grew up on that island and or were summering there. Very fascinating, beautiful community. And then we operated like an after-school dance program at Green Hill School, which is a progressive elementary school in Brooklyn. We did like free classes when we would perform in festivals. I remember the Downtown Dance Festival. We led like a giant group of people in Battery Park or somewhere in one of our dances. So we did a lot of stuff like that. And it was generally headed up by Ashley Eichbauer-Newman, who is now the Director of Education and Engagement for the company. She was a founding dancer in the company, and she went back to school to Bank Street College to get her degree in education. And I sort of always hoped she would come back and share, and that is what's happened. And so she and I have been talking for, I don't know, we've been talking for about a year leading up to the 10th anniversary about really what education means for our company and what we could do that would be different than other companies and what our area of alignment is. And we started to find those touch points, and we've done 5 education events now that, and one is happening right now as we sit in this dressing room. I'm taking a break from our winter intensive, Dissecting the Dance, which is a 4-day deep dive into this new work, The Girl with the Alkaline Eyes, from a lot of different lenses. But what's already happened is we've built this amazing community that you're part of. And you know, we are not in the business of doing like giant master classes where people come in and pay a little bit of money and are there for an hour and you never see them again. We're really trying to like return again and again to the same people and go deeper and deeper and deeper. And eventually I really see that circle closing so that our education program and our company dancers and our community, all of that is one circle. Mm-hmm. And that's already starting to happen in some exciting ways.
Yeah.
Well, I want to kind of switch gears into theater mode for a little bit. I'm so curious to ask about your experience with Spider-Man, because you were brought on, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you were brought on for maybe the second second opening of it, the second version, 2.0.
Exactly right. You were
and,
correct.
I guess what I'm most curious about is what it was like to be brought on kind of with something so in the public eye that there's, you know, there's already a lot of eyes on us as artists, especially commercially with a big Broadway show. But with something like Spider-Man that was so newsworthy, what was that experience like for you?
You know, so I replaced the original choreographer in like the third or fourth month of previews, which like even the idea of like that many months of previews is already silly. And, you know, there was like this incredible irony that I bought a full price ticket and attended the first preview of 1.0 just because I was a Julie Taymor fan.
Oh yeah.
And
I saw the first version too.
Yeah. And so I was at the first preview, and in fact, weirdly, I was waiting outside the theater, and I guess a New York Times photographer took a photo, and there's a photo in the New York Times of the first preview, and I'm in that photo, like, as a ticket-buying patron.
Oh my god, hilarious.
And then on opening night of the show, I was on stage bowing next to Julie Taymor and as the choreographer.
Crazy.
So that, in a nutshell, like, tries to just, like, tell you how wild the whole experience was. But, I think when you think of being a, you know, quote, show doctor or something like that, you think of people like Jerome Robbins and people who have many, many, like, credits to their, you know, name and years of Broadway experience as a choreographer or as a director. This was such an unusual thing because it was my Broadway debut as a choreographer and I was 27 years old. And so it was a very kind of I had imagined making a Broadway debut as a choreographer. I did not imagine it would be, like, that was the absolute last situation I imagined.
Sure.
And in a lot of ways, it was really wonderful. I mean, I think actually a lot of more experienced people probably didn't want anywhere near that show because of all of the kind of controversy and buzz.
Sure.
And the bad buzz. And I think, of course, like, you know, the element, I mean, there were safety, I mean, there were things that were happening at the show that were, you know, there were injuries, and I don't know. I think people who had 20 years as director choreographer experience weren't coming to that show. But on the other hand, for someone really looking for a break, it was sort of the right moment because I was able to really get in there and work my ass off.
Yeah.
With everybody else and do all we could to take care of the company and to basically frame, I mean, in a way it was a semi-thankless job because the best thing I think that we could do in my mission was, like, you know, Julie Taymor, whose work I loved so much, was not getting through to enough people. There were too many barriers up and there were too many things that went off track. And so it was kind of like, can we weed out some of the tangents and can we kind of focus back on the story of Peter Parker and his amazing adventure and make that the central thread and really platform all this amazing design and you know, and some great choreography that Danny Azzurillo had done that I really admired. But like to try to, you know, make it work for an audience, a worldwide global audience who thinks, you know, they're buying a ticket to the Spider-Man Broadway musical.
Yeah.
And so I learned a lot on that show. I mean, you know, you learn so much working on anything, but especially like a big, huge show like that and something that's in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
So it was in a lot of ways, it was like the best of times and the worst of times.
Sure.
The worst being, of course, when there were injuries and things like that.
Yeah.
And the best of times was like, I was sitting backstage with Bono, like hanging out and,
right.
I don't know.
So bizarre.
Did you ever get to get in the fly system and like jump from the balcony?
Unfortunately, I and my associate were both too small. They actually, by the time we came, all of that had been programmed. It was programmed, especially those, the kind of like round over the house.
Yeah.
Those were programmed for, you know, guys who were like 5'10", basically between 5'10 and 6 feet. And we were both like 5'6.5". Mm-hmm. Like we're too small. They wouldn't let us go because you actually could like smash into a wall because there wasn't enough weight. You didn't have enough weight to counteract, you know, all of that. So I always wanted to, and I never did get to.
No.
But I pointed up in the air and said, can you change your left hand and bend your elbow? I did a lot of that from the ground.
Oh my gosh. So interesting. Yeah, I remember seeing, I saw previews of 1.0.
Mm-hmm.
I never got to see it.
Mm-hmm.
We were in spring break in 2010.
Yeah, spring break,
2011.
Yeah.
2011.
It was, I mean, look, it was bold and audacious. And there were some, I mean, George Siepen is like one of the wild designers of history. I mean, he's an amazing theater designer, and it was so cool being in his world, and you know, just playing around in Julie Taymor's masks. And the costume designer was Eiko Ishioka, who's an amazing visionary costume designer. I mean, it was a really cool world to be playing around in. I think it, you know, it was hard in some ways because it actually really did jumpstart my like off-Broadway theater career and my musical career. I mean, I really, from that moment, I have been so blessed to have a pretty, you know, connect the dots kind of one thing has led to another in theater. But I think it took a while to kind of come back to Broadway as a choreographer. And I had this amazing moment where I choreographed Sam Gold's revival of Picnic, and it played next door at the American Airlines Theater. And so it was like so fun for one moment to have twin Broadway shows. But that opened and closed very quickly while Spider-Man was running. And then Spider-Man closed the first week of 2014. And this is my first time back to Broadway, which will be so exciting, in February of 2019. So.
Yeah, with Be More Chill, that mega hit sensation.
Yeah. Ah!
Now, this is kind of like, you know, you talked about how kind of Spider-Man was maybe the last way you would have expected to make your debut as a choreographer. And I would imagine Be More Chill is maybe a similar kind of thing, because it's been kind of this slow burn into like an explosion. Talk about that kind of experience from its beginning at Two River to Off Broadway.
I mean, you're so right. I love that like slow burn into an explosion. That's so true. I mean, when my friend Annika Chapin, who was the literary manager of Two River Theater at the time, wrote me an email and was like, hey, this is you. It was like, I know this is you. We've known each other for a long time. I've wanted to do something with you. This project is you. It's high school students. It's finding a vocabulary that's all about joy. And, you know, she was like, this is like quirky and colorful and just like, it's you. And it felt very exciting to be seen in that way and to kind of be like, oh, wow, an intelligent person's actually thinking about the appropriateness of what my worldview is or what my work is like and how it might aid in the storytelling of this project. And, you know, then she said it was by Joe Iconis, and Joe is so gifted and so smart and just wonderful and ready for his chance. And I was super excited when I heard the songs. They were hilarious and I loved them, and they were quirky outsider songs, which is everything I love. And but at that moment, so I knew I had to do it, but none of us, I think, had any possible inkling that would end up on Broadway. If anything, I did sort of say, like, you know, this feels like a Little Shop kind of cult. Like, couldn't this, but we were like, couldn't this find like a small house somewhere to run off Broadway for a couple years or a couple months even? And it felt a little bit unfair that it didn't find its audience like that, or didn't find its, I guess, producers the first go around, because it did seem like it deserved more of a chance. But I think this whole sort of situation, it was not anything any one of us imagined. And in a way, this is the way I did dream of making my Broadway debut, is a piece where I choreographed it from the beginning. I was part of the development of, you know, the structure of those numbers. My husband, Rob Berman, I brought him on as the dance music arranger. So, you know, and I love working with Joe Iconis. I mean, the whole thing is, it's so cool. And we made something quirky that we liked and we cared about. And we didn't have any sort of producer guidance beyond the artistic staff of Two River Theater. There was not like a money person sort of leaning heavily in any direction. And we just like made a quirky, weird thing that we liked. And I think largely because of that, it felt really authentic. It is authentic. Totally, and so it spoke, it found, connected with people. It's found its audience, and that's like what you dream of. And so to be able to really have a piece like that, find the people who need to hear it, and then they speak back to us, and we're in this just amazing kind of like circle of dialogue with this incredible fan family. It's amazing, and I'm glad that I'm old enough. I'm 35 now, and I'm glad that I'm old enough to know how rare that is. And so as soon as The Girl with the Alkaline Eyes has closed, I plan to really, we have a 1 week of overlap. I plan to settle in and really try and just be very present for this Broadway season. I want to just really be there and enjoy
it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no.
I can't wait to see it.
I know. We're very excited to see it again. We were lucky to see it.
I won the lottery.
You did.
I was so lucky. Yeah.
Do you know that those were like, there were times that it was like two seats and four seats. It was not like three seats.
Yeah. Like we won and we sat like on opposite ends of like the front row.
So even like you as a mayor, you did not get it.
Yeah.
That's wild. I'm so happy you saw it. I forgot. You might have told me that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and friend of the podcast, George Salazar.
Love
George.
Love. There's no one better. George Salazar and I also did this Jonathan Groff, Bobby Darin show.
Yes, with Alex.
With Alex Timbers. Yeah. And I'm hoping we might have like some more news about that sometime soon.
Okay.
So,
oh my god, a hot take. Exclusive. Playbill's gonna be calling.
Oh
us.
My.
Exclusive.
Listen, I hope it would be very fun to revisit that. I think their performances were amazing. And that, again, you never know what like week long quick concert will actually really
take
land.
Off,
yeah.
Exactly.
I love George.
I know we do too.
Yeah.
What a mess.
Yeah.
They're coming, the entire cast of Be More Chill is coming to see The Girl with the Alkaline Eyes.
Oh, how fun.
Oh my god, so exciting.
Yes, yeah. My families are going to meet each other. It's going to be
oh,
awesome.
That's really, really exciting.
It's going to be very
what are you, painful. What are you most excited about for the Broadway Be More Chill experience? I know you said you're going to just be very present, but what are some things you're like really looking forward to?
I'm really excited for us to continue making the most woke version of that story for right now. And I really want, I know that we are all in every department challenging ourselves to really be mindful of our community and our fan family and make sure that we're speaking to them in every area. And of course, the characters speaking to them in a way that we want to be speaking to them, and in a way that's empowering and that's inclusive and all of that. And so I think that's the thing I'm most excited about. I think this musical kind of belongs to people all over the world now in a way. Mm-hmm. And so I think it can contain a lot of different viewpoints, and it has already absorbed new things that the fans made canon, and you know, I don't know. There's
sure.
And so yeah. I'm excited to continue exploring that in our latest and hopefully greatest iteration.
No, I love that. It seems like something that is like owned by everyone involved, which is kind of really, really cool. And I think definitely why people have connected with it so much, because they feel seen and heard.
There's
as
so much
part
representation
of it.
In
yeah.
it, I feel too, when seeing and listening to it.
Yeah.
That's what I loved about it.
Awesome. I know the best part about seeing it front row was sitting next to all the girls that were very excited.
Did you see anybody in costume, or were there did they dress?
There was some.
There were a lot of creep shirts.
Yes.
Yes.
I feel like the girls behind me had learned the choreography because they were also doing it as well.
It's
so.
Amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no, you know, at the first preview, there was someone near me and they were doing the choreography exactly correctly, which was like, you know, and it was a part that had been in the Two River production, and there was like bootlegs online, but it was just amazing to think. I mean, I've never seen that before. That hasn't been part of my.
How does that feel like when you see someone else do? They have no connection, but they're doing your choreography. Is that kind of like, whoa, like.
That's so amazing.
Yeah,
what
like
could be better than
like,
that?
Yeah.
It feels like we made something,
yeah.
And like I gave them language, and now they're speaking in it. That what could be more poetic? It's so beautiful.
That's amazing. Well, we are going to play some.
Just a
short
game.
We're gonna play
silly. Nice, quick
time.
Use them, yes. Okay, so just quick.
Okay.
First thing pops ahead. If we feel like we want
rapid
to discuss
fire.
A little bit more, we'll
ooh.
Slow down the rapid fire.
I like a rapid fire.
Okay. Favorite sci-fi film.
Ex Machina. The count.
What is that?
Oh, it's such a good. It was like a big part of our research for this piece. Actually, you should see the movie.
Okay.
It's claustrophobic and sort of terrifying and a little bit like a play. It's very sparse.
Okay. 2019 resolutions. Do you do those?
Do you know what I really want is to take a little bit of time off. I really want to try to find like a little bit more balance. I would love to travel some more this year for pleasure. And like that.
Cool.
Number one place you want to go?
Bali just came into my head.
Oh.
I don't know if that's actually true, but maybe I have to do it now.
Okay. Would you rather be a violin, a saxophone, or drum?
A drum, of course.
You're very like iconic for your glasses, I feel like. You know, and so what is your favorite pair of glasses that you own or wanting to own or next idea design for them?
My favorite maker is Teo, and if I had unlimited money, I would just get like 100 of I have so many beautiful, amazing designs.
Mm-hmm.
And I have about 40 total frames, but I would get like 100 more and just, I would never wear them again. I would wear them one time each and that would be wasteful but fun.
Store them? Like, are they like, they're on the displayed in your apartment? Or like...
Yes, they're on the windowsill, although they're color coded, but the windowsill is full. So I'm working on that. I gotta figure out a new system.
P.S. Sidebar, Michelle Visage is now doing like a 365 days of eyewear right now. So she's posting her different frames every day for a year.
How delightful.
So on Instagram, if you're interested.
I am interested. You know, she came and hung out with us for a day of rehearsal at Be More Chill.
Yes, she talks about it on the podcast all the time. I was texting George when I heard it. I was like, I hate you. She was stupid.
She was super cool. I was like really fun. She was lovely.
That's amazing.
She was super cool.
So we're in like cold season. How do you keep healthy? Like three tips.
I'm so not healthy right now. I like really feel like I'm not healthy right now. I mean, I think eating well, you are what you eat. So I'm vegan. I've been vegan for almost 20 years. But like whole foods and not that much sugar is like, that's good. Drinking a lot of water. That's so obvious, but it's really true. I've been drinking a ton of coffee. That's not so good.
It's not water. I forget that.
I know. There's a lot of water in here. Coffee is good in limited amounts. My doctor said I should have 3 cups and no more. And I am... Don't tell, I'm having way too much right now. And what other way, I love yoga. I love when I'm in a regular yoga practice. And often it actually happens out of town on jobs because in a funny way, that's when my life
it's
is like the
vacation.
Most, it's when my life is the most structured. I'm kind of stuck somewhere and I can't stack multiple projects on top of each other. Uh-huh. But in New York, everybody's always like, can you just do like one more little, you know, like you've got a few hours and of course I always want to do it.
Can you just do one more little podcast interview just break?
I'm happy. I want it all. I want a big, huge life, but it's a lot. It's a lot.
Totally. Do you watch Netflix?
Yeah.
Okay, what must be watched right this weekend?
I really want to get back to, oh my gosh, it's called, what is this thing called? We
might be able to help.
We started it. It's like a.
It's a crime?
No, it's like a futury. It came
Lost
out
in Space?
This fall. It came out this fall. It's a cool series called. It's got like a one word title. There was a guy who's. There's a funny quote that we always quote. I'm not going to say it. What is it? I can't think of the name of it. It's. I can't think of the name of this, but it's a really cool, futuristic-y, like, strange. They're in a lab. They're set in a lab. There's a testing thing going on. They're in a like study of some sort. A sleep study, it might be. It's a dream sleep state.
It's not the one with Emma Stone, is it?
Yes.
Oh,
what was that called?
It's so cool. I don't know.
With Emma Stone and Jonah Hill.
It's got one word called like ironic or
like
iconic,
manifest,
or limitless,
like,
or
crazy, or like it's
maniac.
Give maniac. Yes! Oh my god, that was horrifying. I want to see that.
We got there to.
I am not caught up on things like Stranger Things, which I really liked, and I like am off of that. And then what is the Archie? What is that new? There's a new Archie. Something high. Something. Whatever. I can't. Clearly, I have to get back to Netflix.
When you're on a vacation later this year. Okay. If you were bit by a genetically modified animal, what would that be, and what superpower do you get from them?
The only animal I can think of at all is dogs, because we adopted a new dog named Hudson, who's like an 11-pound chihuahua, we think Skipper Key mix. So Hudson, like a bionic-y Hudson would bite me, and all he wants to do is play with his Kong all day, night and day. So I guess I would just eat Kongs all the time. Just like always have a Kong toy.
What is
He's
a Kong
obsessed.
Toy?
It's like rubber, this little rubber funnel that you like stuff treats
into.
Oh,
okay,
so
yeah,
it's like
yeah,
a
yeah. They have to work
challenge.
For it. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. We get it like in the morning. The first thing is like gunk. And it's like, he's like dropped it on the floor at our feet. Like
hilarious.
And that's the last thing we hear at night is it like hitting our chest as he's like sleeping on us, dropping it to say, refill this.
Oh, yeah.
And the first thing in the morning as I hear that, like I start to stir and then off the bed like falls the Kong.
God, so
he's
funny.
An addict. Hmm. Totally addicted.
Best restaurant in New York.
I'm vegan, so I love Modern Love. I like Screamer's Pizza. I like Avant Garden. I love Double Zero Pizza. Ooh, it sounds like a lot of pizza.
Yes.
A classic show you want to re-envision.
I would really love to direct The Music Man on Broadway.
Mm-hmm. Most important phrase to know in German.
20 minuten pause, 20 minute pause. 20 minute break. It's been rehearsal. You need a minute to think.
And last question. This is a I can't believe this is my job moment that you've had throughout your career.
Do you know the one that came, I'm just going to say it, the one that came to my mind unedited was when I choreographed the world premiere of Waitress. And I think like the moment of being like, Sarah Bareilles and I are hanging out in Cambridge, like writing dance music, and like, that was wild. That was like, I'm doing that. Yeah. And that job has an unhappy ending because I quit, but I love Sarah Bareilles, and until it didn't work anymore, that was a cool, the idea of that job was super cool.
I love that.
They're not all hit. It doesn't all work.
It doesn't always work.
And it's okay to back away from it.
Yeah, it's not all for you. It's not all for you. That wasn't for me.
Well, you are for us.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being on the show. Can you tell our audience more about your show? And can you tell our audience where to find more information on...
Absolutely. Yes, thank you. The show is The Girl with the Alkaline Eyes. My company is The Chase Brock Experience. You should go to www.chasebrockexperience.com for information and tickets. We're running at Theater Row till January 13th. And if you missed that, you can go on our website and sign up for our mailing list and find out about our next shows and our education programming. And of course, you can come see Be More Chill. And I think that's bemorechillbroadway.com.
Yeah. Thanks. Try and get a ticket. Good luck. You can find the podcast at Equity One Podcast on Instagram and Facebook.
And send us an email at equityonepodcast@gmail.com.
Yes. Caleb, where can they find you?
Caleb Dickey on everything.
And I'm at Elliot Maddox on everything. Until next time, cheers!
Cheers!
Oh, that's so lovely. Help me to more than survive.
Descend, and the period is going to end. I'm just trying my best to pass the test and survive.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.